Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak. And Tim, today I'm ready to learn about leadership. I know that you have done a whole lot of work learning about leadership, teaching leadership, all those things, including getting a doctorate on the subject. So start us off. You actually brought up a really great question that I think is one of the essential questions of leadership, and I'd love for you to start there.
This has probably been asked almost as much as any other question in terms of leadership. One of them is, are leaders born or made? That's one. But the one I want to wrestle with today is, do the times that we're living in make the person, the leader, or does the leader make the times? And I think I could make a case for both. You know, certainly Abraham Lincoln was a very extraordinary, steady leader, but the Civil War brought it out of him. We became knowledgeable about this great man who might have served as an attorney in Illinois all of his life, but the presidency lay ahead of him, and then this great, horrible Civil War where he tried to help us through that process. And who knows what it might have looked like had he lived beyond 1865. But I think certainly he made the history, but the history in many ways made him as well.
Yeah.
So for every listener right now, you have context in which you're serving that will shape you, but you'll shape them if you respond well.
Yeah.
So you
could have great
exciting
skills and strength, but without opportunity to display or enhance or develop those skills and strengths, maybe they never show up.
Yeah,
in some ways.
That's true. So on one hand, you might have a personality that goes, well, I'm not super ambitious. I'll just faithfully execute whatever context I have. Others might go, well, I want to do something significant and bigger than I'm doing right now. You might want to be looking for opportunities. I have always been a little bit ambitious in my life to write, to create, to help, to serve. But I've also tried to never forget, let me just faithfully execute what's in front of me right now before I try to graduate to something bigger.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I know we want to talk about how does this sort of look? Where does it come out?
Yeah.
And I know the way that you've kind of summarized it are four common characteristics of extraordinary leaders. So let's get into that. What does this look like?
Okay. So I love the quote that Harry Truman made, our former president. He said, men make history and not the other way around. And by that, he means men and women.
Yeah.
People make history, not the other way around. In periods where there is no leadership, society stands still. Progress occurs when courageous, skillful leaders seize the opportunity to change things for the better. So in one sense, he's arguing for be the person that's ready to be made in those times. So what I've got is four ideas that might be helpful for our listeners on what is it that extraordinary leaders do that maybe feel ordinary, but they become extraordinary because these four things. So here's number one.
Let's do it.
The first one is, I find that they welcome crises and face them head on. So while in our humanity we might be prone to shrink or tempted to, you know, falter and say, call me when this is over, I think the great leaders, even if they feel inadequate, still go, this needs to be faced. I'm going to have the hard conversation before the easy one, not the easy one before the hard one like we talk about around here. Great illustrations of this one would be during the dark days of World War II, Neville Chamberlain was the Prime Minister of England in the early days when Adolf Hitler was rising to power. He kept trying to convince the Parliament and the British people, I think we can just negotiate this. I think he's actually not a bad guy. And clearly history has proven otherwise.
Yeah.
Hitler said, yeah, we'll do a peace treaty here and there, but he never stuck to it.
Yeah.
Winston Churchill comes along behind Prime Minister Chamberlain, and he is clearly a man that said, we got to face this head on. And he became what they called the Lion of England. And by the way, I love what he said. He said, they call me the Lion. The people were the Lion. I was just the growl.
Wow.
But I love that. But he faced it, and he convinced Parliament, and then he convinced on radio broadcasts, we've got to face this head on. So listeners, here's the application for you. I know you don't feel like Winston Churchill or somebody great like Abe Lincoln.
Yeah.
But the greatest of leaders feel ordinary, but they know I've got to have the backbone to face this head on. I've got to know what I'm doing, and I've got to face it, even if I figure it out as I go.
I get the sense that there's an alertness of there's a challenge and I see it. Like obviously Churchill had to look and say, this is a man who cannot be negotiated with.
That's
and you're trying to negotiate. It's like trying to negotiate with a snake. It's not going to work. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So he is aware, but then he also had the courage to mm-hmm. say, we can because we must solve this problem.
You're exactly right. Those are the two inward components. Awareness, which Neville Chamberlain didn't seem to have.
Yeah.
I think he was hopeful. I'm hoping I can have. And of course, you want to negotiate whenever you can. That's a far better answer. But Churchill realized this is not going away.
Yes.
It's not going to get better. We need to deal with this. And they deal with it, he did. And of course, the Allied forces won the war.
That's fantastic.
So that's number one.
Okay.
They welcome crises and face them head on. Number two, they see their context as a place to serve people, not secure power. Now, this is counterintuitive to humanity. Most of the time, as humans, we're not evil people, but we love the power that comes when we get some authority and some influence.
Yeah.
So we want to stay in power when we get power. We want to keep our jobs, not just do our jobs.
Yeah.
This is a natural thing. So the classic illustration to me, and again, nobody's evil here, but when I look back centuries ago, we look at Emperor Constantine, who was one of the Roman emperors, and he moved, if you remember, he moved the capital of Rome from Rome to Constantinople.
Mm.
So he named it after himself. And again, I'm not saying that's an evil thing, but I mean, it's kind of clearly a signal. By that time, he had made some policies and he wanted to make sure I will be remembered.
Yes.
I'm going to name the capital after me and I'm going to secure my power and stay in office until I die. Now, again, that's not bad, but I think the ordinary leaders that become extraordinary see their job the entire time. I'm serving.
Yeah.
So one example, I know he's not perfect, is Pope Francis in our day. So he basically has seen his role as the Pope of the Catholic Church as a place to care for the marginalized, to serve the everyday person, and he has won many people over, not just Catholics, but Protestants as well and others, because of his spirit to serve. He's not leveraging it to get more power or to stay in power. He's actually wanting to serve the marginalized. And I think my hat's off to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know what it makes me think of is, just as a real quick example, I've been learning more and more about the significance of American history and different things, especially the period right after America won its independence. And one of the fascinating stories around that is how many people would have voted George Washington into
absolutely.
Office if he had wanted that.
Yeah.
And talking about how George Washington let people know a year before his quote-unquote term was up, I'm not staying in this position of power. I'm going to be alive, but not in this primary position of power. And he really sort of put his stamp of approval on this thing that we call democracy now because of the way he handled that situation, which I love.
In fact, it was so extraordinary that the King of England, when he heard that Washington did not want to stay in power, he simply said this: the man who doesn't want the power is the most powerful of all.
Yeah.
And Washington was. He's on the dollar bill,
you know,
because he didn't hold on to it.
Mm-hmm.
Another quick great example here, I think during the days of World War II and before, was Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yeah.
So her husband was the president, but he was fighting polio and other diseases. And so there were many weeks and months. We actually don't know how long he wasn't actually able to function. She steps in, and she didn't call attention to herself because that wouldn't have looked well at the time for a woman to be. But she led in many ways, extraordinary ways, because her heart was to serve the American people and women in particular, which was so – she was ahead of her time. But my point is you can see this in all times of history, both genders. It's the people that want to serve that are ones that we remember and say – that's an extraordinary leader.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, let's do the third one.
The third one is another extraordinary trait. They leverage their own strengths and style to reach a goal. So instead of taking a place of leadership and saying, well, I got to imitate the guy behind me because he was really good, or I got to learn to speak really well, or I've got to learn to these people know they're comfortable in their own shoes, they know what they're strong in, and they lead out of their strength to take the people to the goal.
Mm.
For me, one of the classic illustrations of this, and again, this is just me, is a hero of the city we're in right now, Atlanta, Georgia, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Again, not saying he's perfect, but what a hero and legend he's become. When Dr. King was asked to lead the civil rights movement and later the marches, he was a young man. And he could have tried to just imitate past leaders who made some progress, But he was a rhetorical leader, meaning he led with his words, and he was brilliant with his words. We still would say the most famous speech of the 20th century was his speech in August of 1963, I Have a Dream.
Yeah.
But Dr. King led with his words and led us to a place of greater equal rights, greater civil rights than ever before. The Civil Rights Act in 1964, the Voting Rights Act, that was primarily the movement that he led. Now, here's why I bring him up. In so many cases, the civil rights leaders since that time have not been Dr. King. I'm not saying they're bad, but I'm just saying, and I'm not even naming names, but just since that, the last 50 years, he died 50 years ago.
Yeah.
They've tried so hard to be Dr. King again. You know, they want to imitate him.
Yeah.
Just like I watch people try to imitate John Maxwell when I served for him for 20, just be John, talk like him, have a Diet Coke and sit on a stool.
You know? Exactly.
And you just can't do it. You've got to find your strengths and you got to lead with your own style.
Yeah.
And Dr. King did that brilliantly.
Love
I think. Yeah.
I think also of the story of William Wilberforce, right?
Yeah.
A guy who thought, I'm supposed to be a pastor and who actually, when he actually said, what are the things I have to offer? What does the world need right now?
Yeah.
He actually realized, no, this role is a politician role.
That's right.
And was able to move the needle and end slavery in England because
Absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
All right. Number four?
Number four, the fourth and final one. And I want you to make sure and summarize these at the end, Andrew. But I would say the fourth one is they balance the past and future in their decisions. So I think they entered as feeling ordinary, but they became extraordinary because they saw the larger picture in their decision-making, not just a knee-jerk reaction in the moment to get people off my back or to vote for me again, but I'm balancing past and future. I'm on a swing set. I'm looking backwards, and then I'm looking forwards. I'm swinging back and forth. So let me give you a couple of examples I'm thinking of here. During the 1960s, we mentioned Dr. King leading the civil rights movement. He was not the only civil rights leader. Malcolm X, if you remember, was a big name in civil rights activism.
Yeah.
But if you remember, his methods were very, very different than Dr. King. Dr. King had learned from Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, from Jesus Christ, and he said, it's got to be peaceful. We got to march, but it's got to be a peaceful demonstration. Malcolm X, extraordinary persuader, but didn't have the patience to do it peacefully, to do a march. I mean, it was violence if necessary. In fact, violence maybe is the protocol of the day. And he's obviously still remembered, but not nearly the way that Dr. King is remembered. Now, let me compare Malcolm X to Nelson Mandela.
Mm.
So here's a man who waited, balancing past and future. He knew that maybe South Africa could experience what America had experienced earlier. Apartheid was in existence, if you remember. He was doing things, some of which he regretted, but he waited and waited, went to prison for years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
Stayed faithful to the cause in prison, wrote letters, minded his own P's and Q's, and when he gets out, oh my gosh, he's a legend. He's elected as the first black president in South African history. And if you remember, even then, he keeps things balanced. He doesn't just make decisions for black people in deference to them. In fact, remember rugby was a big sport, and he made sure that we got to do the white sport here. The cool thing is he became extraordinary because everybody saw, oh, my gosh, you're a better man than me. I don't know if I could have kept all of that in mind as I made decisions.
Yeah, and still remained the same person.
That's right.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Mother Teresa, another good example. She kept the past and the future as she dealt with the poor in the streets of Calcutta. It's just amazing to me how you see these four categories, you see these patterns that made them great and that made them separate themselves from other leaders.
That's great. Well, what's cool about this is this is helpful for me as a leader, right? And the adults who are listening to this are thinking, this is helpful for me. But these are also really helpful principles to hand to the next generation
and say,
if you want to know what greatness looks like, look no further than these men and women who are doing this amazing thing.
Absolutely.
I want to go back over these really quick. So our four common characteristics of extraordinary leaders, they welcome crises and they face them head on.
Yep.
We talked about that. Number two, they see their context as a place to serve people, not secure power.
Yep.
Love that. Number three, they leverage their own strengths and styles in order to lead towards the goal.
Right.
And then number four, they balance the past and the future in their decisions. They didn't just change everything, but they asked, where have we come from and where are we trying to get to? I love that. Four really great things. As you're leading the next generation, you may be wondering, how do we talk about this? How do we start conversations around leadership? And you and I work together really to figure out what are the best things that we have to cover in order to help students develop mm-hmm. leadership. And you came up with what we felt were like 31 key yeah. principles. Yeah. And we put those into a course yeah. that we call Habitudes for Building Student Leaders.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to say anything about
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. So these are the Habitude images that many of our listeners are familiar with. If you're not, Habitudes is a unique way of learning and teaching leadership, because it utilizes the power of an image, a conversation, and an experience. So we don't think kids are into lectures. I don't know if they've ever been into lectures.
Yeah.
But habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. And there are 31 of them that we feel like these are fundamental that every young leader ought to learn.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if you're working with students who are in positions of leadership, especially, you know, your student government, yeah. Elected officials yeah. in your school, yeah. all those different kinds of folks, and you're wondering, I'd really love to talk to them about leadership, talk to them what what does a great servant leader mm-hmm. look like?
Yes.
That's yeah. really who we had in mind when we designed this. Mm-hmm. So Habitudes for Building Student Leaders is something that you can find online, growingleaders.com, and you look under Habitudes, you'll be able to find out all about it. We'd love for you to check out that resource and see if it might be a good tool for you to use to talk about leadership with mm-hmm. your students. Thanks so much for joining us with this conversation. As always, we want you to connect with us on social media. Tim tweets at Tim Elmore, and you can find at Growing Leaders on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those different places. We love to connect with you there. Please rate the podcast if you get the chance. Rating it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts really helps kind of get the word out about what we're doing here. And hopefully we can connect more people with great resources like this to talk to their students about the power of leadership. And as always, if you got ideas or you want to connect with us, maybe say, hey, this is a person you guys need to know about or interview on the podcast, shoot us an email. It's podcast@growingleaders.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks, Tim, for leading us and talking about leadership. And we'll see you next time.